Welcome to the Nail Your Nutrition podcast, a podcast focused on training for endurance activity. I'm Sarah, a registered dietitian and toddler mom in the Washington, D.C. area. I write the blog Bucket List Tummy and focus most of my work on running and endurance athletes, as well as merging the principles of sports nutrition with the principles of intuitive eating.
And I'm Marita, a sports dietitian and fellow toddler mom in Pensacola, Florida. I work with endurance athletes at my private practice, Eat to Compete. My goal is to help athletes learn to fuel their training with intuitive eating. We are two sports dietitians and moms here to break down the nutrition science to make training more fun and approachable for you. Whether you're a novice athlete, a weekend warrior, a mom trying to fit in a consistent exercise schedule, or a top finisher at big races, we want to help you understand the importance of fueling well. We're so glad to have you here and would appreciate you spreading the word or sharing this episode or podcast with a friend, family member, training partner, coworker, or anyone you would think would enjoy it. If you have a minute, please leave us a review wherever you subscribe to your podcast, as that really helps the show. Now let's get to today's episode. Hey athletes, today we're talking with Dr. Amy Bender, a sleep expert and senior research scientist at Calgary Counseling Center, as well as an adjunct assistant professor of kinesiology at the University of Calgary. Dr. Bender has helped develop the only validated sleep screening tool for athletes and has implemented sleep organization strategies for numerous Canadian Olympic and professional teams. So cool, right? She's also a former college basketball athlete and completed an Ironman in 2009, so she approaches her work with an athlete's lens. During this episode, we discussed why sleep is so important for athletes, how it helps in so many different facets of our life and training, exactly how much sleep athletes need, the not-so-well-known importance of naps, what supplements help with sleep, if diet plays a role in sleep and vice versa, and why if you're in a sleep-deprived time of your life, aka you have a new baby or a toddler who hates sleep, it's probably not a good idea to take on a new training cycle and how that can really affect your training in a negative way. Before we learn all about sleep for athletes, I just wanted to remind you about our monthly raffle we have for those who leave us a review. We so appreciate you taking the time to type up a short review for the podcast and want to say thank you. So each month, we choose one random review, and that reviewer can have a free 30-minute phone call with either Sarah or myself to talk all things nutrition. We also started a Patreon if you want to support us further. Go to patreon.com/nayournutrition or check out the show notes. Okay, let's talk with Dr. Bender. Hi, Dr. Bender. We're so happy to have you on today. And it's actually just me because Sarah had her baby early. So I'm just solo recording today. And we are so happy to have you on, Dr. Bender. So please, can you tell us a little bit about your background as an athlete and as a researcher and how you got interested in sleep research?
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. So I kind of stumbled into the sleep field a little bit. My aunt was a sleep technologist in Portland, Oregon, and I was kind of looking for a job to transition to. She invited me out to her sleep lab. She hooked up some patients with a bunch of electrodes and showed me what those signals looked like on the screen, and it was absolutely fascinating to me. I ended up volunteering in a sleep lab back in Spokane, where I'm from, and then landed a job at the Sleep and Performance Research Center at Washington State University, whose lab was opening up at the time. And I just so happened to land a job as a sleep technologist there. So I was a sleep technologist for about 4 years, and then I wanted to go to graduate school. So I stayed there, got my master's and PhD in experimental psychology, and then was looking kind of for a postdoc related to athletes because I've been an athlete all my life. I played three sports in high school. I played college basketball. I even did an Ironman in 2009. So I was just kind of looking for how to combine those two passions of sleep and sport. I ended up doing a postdoc at University of Calgary and working with Canadian Olympic team athletes and optimizing their sleep. And then after that, I currently am the senior research scientist at Calgary Counseling Center, where we're looking at applying sleep interventions for better mental health.
Oh, that's so cool and such a fun background. And I went to college in Seattle. I went to Seattle University and my husband went to UW. So familiar with that area. That's awesome.
Nice. Yes. I had a friend that went to Seattle University as well, and two brothers that graduated from UW.
Oh, cool. But, go Huskies.
I might add, go Cougs.
I know. I knew you were going to say that. Too funny. we can agree to disagree. Okay. So, yeah. So are you still an athlete? Like, what are you still doing in that regard?
I'm just kind of doing some recreational running. I have three small kids, so it's a little bit more challenging. Yeah. Focus more on activities I can do with the whole family. So hiking, paddleboarding, camping, those kind of things.
Perfect. I love that. Let's dive right in. Can you tell us a little bit about sleep deficiency or just how an overall lack of sleep affects us physically, mentally, and emotionally?
Yes. Sleep deprivation, sleep restriction, however you want to coin it, does lead to more physical problems, more mental problems. So those with poor sleep or not enough sleep have links with obesity, diabetes, mental health problems. So there is that relationship. I would say if we go a little bit deeper, when we're looking at the brain, we are more emotional with sleep deprivation, and there is an activation of the amygdala, so that high emotional reactivity in the brain, and there's a deactivation of the prefrontal cortex, which is involved in rational decision-making. So studies have shown that is the case. There's higher amygdala activity, lower prefrontal cortex activity, which is why, you're more emotional when you're sleep deprived. And even during my graduate work, we were doing studies where we had participants, they're sleep deprived for 36 hours. And this was repeated three times with two rest days in between. And even a study involving 62 hours of sleep deprivation, so two full nights without sleep. And just from a behavioral standpoint, I noticed people were way more emotional. They were crying more. And it was really, their mood was definitely impacted by this kind of, I would say, extreme amount of sleep deprivation. From a physical standpoint, we know that sleep is repairing cells during the night and different hormones are being released. So growth hormone is released during sleep that helps repair our tissues, helps us just repair and rejuvenate from that sleep that we have. So yeah, there's some examples of kind of what sleep deprivation, sleep restriction can do to us physically and mentally.
Wow. Yeah. And so how does that play in for athletes? Do these things matter more for athletes? Do they require more sleep, less sleep? Can they get away with having less sleep? Or since they, ask so much of their bodies emotionally, physically, even mentally, do they have higher sleep needs?
Yes, great question. Well, we know that we don't know for sure, but we think because of those physical and mental demands on the body that athletes do need more sleep. For an average adult, we're looking at a minimum of 7 hours, 7 to 9. And then for an athlete, we think they need more, so maybe more like 8 to 10. With even adolescents who need about 8 to 10, non-athletes needing even more than that. So it's really challenging. And athletes, when we look at the research, they're not necessarily able to get that. I think because of everything that they're juggling with their training schedules, school, that kind of thing, it's a lot more challenging to do that. Now, if we know that sleep deprivation can impact reaction time, so I think that's kind of a main point of why sleep would be important, sleep optimization would be important for athletes, is because of the reaction time can be drastically increased when we're sleep deprived, but also decision-making is impacted as well, which is important for an athlete.
Oh, for sure. I bet that plays a huge role. And the example I think is if you're out bike riding and you're a car comes up behind you, you want to have that quick reaction time. And if you didn't get enough sleep, that could be compromised.
Definitely.
Yeah. So what is the like bare minimum amount of sleep you would recommend for athletes?
I think it kind of depends on the ages I mentioned, but I would say aiming for at least 7.5 hours with potentially some napping in addition to that. Napping is really important. Not a lot of athletes take advantage of napping, but we know from the research that it helps improve mood, it helps improve alertness, reaction time, and in some instances, napping is actually more effective than caffeine when we're looking at performance.
Oh, that's so interesting. So can you tell us like what time of day is the perfect time to take a nap?
Sure. Yeah. So we want to kind of align that with our dip in circadian alertness. So in the afternoon, typically you want to nap between noon and 4 p.m. So you don't want it too late because then that could impact your ability to fall asleep. And then you want to hopefully align it when we have a natural dip in alertness within that afternoon period.
Okay. And what's the ideal nap time?
The duration, it typically, I would say less than 30 minutes is ideal. Then you're not getting into those deeper stages of sleep where you wake up feeling groggy and it takes, you know, over an hour to actually wake up fully.
Right.
But I would say if you have a longer opportunity, if, you know, let's say you have an hour and a half, that potentially could be useful as well, because then you're getting into all the stages of sleep. You're getting into that deep sleep where the growth hormone's being released. You may also be getting into REM sleep, which is important for decision making. So, and also, you know, many athletes, they have early morning training times that they just can't change. I was working with a golf team where it was like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, they had strength training at 6:30 a.m. And these are adolescent athletes, you know, so it's likely because of our circadian rhythm, when you're an adolescent, you have a harder time going to bed early enough. It's just the way our biology, the way your biology works when you're an adolescent is the melatonin, that sleepiness hormone, is being released later. And so if you have a really early morning training, you just aren't able to, you know, go to bed at 8 p.m., which is perfectly normal. So supplementing with a longer nap in that instance to kind of make up for some of that lost sleep at night is key.
Okay, so an hour and a half is a full cycle then?
Yes, typically an hour and a half, although it varies. That's kind of the average, 90 minutes.
Okay, good to know. I've read that sometimes what you can do is have like a half a cup of coffee or other kind of caffeine, and then take a 20-minute nap. And by the time you take that nap and that coffee has entered your system, and then it'll wake you up and then you'll feel a lot more refreshed. Is that true?
The nappuccino is what I like to call it. Yes, actually, I mean, this hasn't been studied well in athletes by any means, but there was maybe one study back in the 90s showing that if you take caffeine combined with a nap, that's more ideal than a nap alone or caffeine by itself. So yeah, the thought is exactly if you take that caffeine, it takes about 15 minutes to get into your system, 15 to 20 minutes. So hopefully within that time you can fall asleep, and then you take that shorter nap, you wake up and you feel really energized and refreshed from the caffeine as well as the nap. I think we have to be careful about that. So personally, I am a go decaf person. So I went to graduate school. I was drinking tons of coffee and didn't really realize how it was impacting my sleep quality. It's just, that's what everyone did. You drank, you know, 3-4 cups of coffee every day when you're a grad student. So it wasn't until my son, my youngest, so I have 3 kids, my youngest is now 3 years old. But when my youngest was about 6 months, I decided to kind of go off caffeine and just see what would happen. And of course, it was very challenging. You know, it takes about 2 weeks to fully go off of it. And I would supplement with a black tea or a green tea or a half a cup of coffee when I had a really poor night's sleep. But it took a while for me to go off of it. But once I did, I felt like I was getting so much better sleep. The quality was amazing. And now I try and just drink caffeine strategically. So potentially if I've had a poor night's sleep, I might have a cup of coffee. Well, half calf is what I keep in my cupboards. But I think just people need to be aware of caffeine impact, and also that you're not really sure how it impacts your sleep. So you may think, oh, I can drink a cup of coffee at dinner and it doesn't impact my sleep. Well, a recent study shown in teenagers found that when they gave them an energy drink at dinner, none of them actually reported that it was a problem subjectively, but when they looked at their sleep objectively, they found that they were getting 20 minutes less of deep sleep per night. So you may not think it is impacting you, but it very well could be. So I like to tell people, drink strategically, not automatically.
Okay, so what do you mean by strategically? Like only have a caffeine in the morning or stop at like a certain cutoff? Like for me personally, I know that I can't have any caffeine after probably like 3:30, no matter how tired I am. If I've had a long day, my toddler didn't sleep, I crash really hard, around 4:30. For me, I know that that's too late. Mm-hmm. So is there like a certain cutoff that you recommend for people, or is it pretty just subjective?
I didn't mention this, but there are different genes related to how you metabolize caffeine. So potentially the best way would be to get one of these nutrigenomic tests where you spit into a tube, collects your saliva, and then tells you whether or not you're a slow metabolizer or a fast metabolizer. So that would be a more concrete way of understanding it. In general, I would say, no caffeine after noon. For slow metabolizers, that it may even be, 10 or 11 a.m. So really trying to abide by those cutoffs. And if you're really tired, could you potentially supplement with a nap? I think that's the other problem with caffeine, is that it masks our sleepiness. So we're not really, if I drink something at noon or 1 or 2 p.m., I may not be as tired. Whereas if I didn't drink that, I would definitely be, falling asleep. So yeah, I think it can mask how you're really feeling, which could then really get at the source, like, oh, well, I need to get to bed earlier tonight, rather than just consuming a bunch of coffee in the afternoon.
Oh, that's so interesting. So, okay, the last like little bit, I think, about caffeine that I want to pick your brain on. I remember reading a couple new studies a while ago, probably, 3 years ago or so, about how you should have that first cup of caffeine at least 2 hours after waking up, because that's kind of when the cortisol dips and that's when you really need that caffeine. That's when it's going to make the most effect. Do you know anything about that study, or can you tell us about that?
Great question. Yeah, I don't remember the exact timing. I'm kind of thinking maybe 60 minutes, 90 minutes, but it's within that range, 60 minutes to 2 hours. So when we wake up, we have a natural rise in cortisol. And so if you wake up right away and then you drink that caffeine, it's kind of two stressors on your system. So I think that's the rationale, is to allow that cortisol to drop after you've woken up and then consume the caffeine.
Yeah. And I remember I started to do that. Now it's been, I try to wait like an hour or so, but I remember I was doing that. It took a while to get used to waiting that, I think it was like 90 minutes, 2 hours, but I definitely noticed a significant increase in my energy level and a drop in anxiety, because I know for some people, caffeine can cause a lot of anxiety. So I felt that that was really, really beneficial. It's really hard to not reach for that coffee as soon as you wake up, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's very interesting that it worked that way for you too.
Yeah. Yeah. I still try to implement it, but it's a little more difficult with a toddler who doesn't necessarily love sleep. So I know you've touched on this a little bit already, but let's dive into maybe the importance of melatonin circadian rhythm. Can you tell us a little bit about the importance of that?
Circadian rhythms are, we have a bunch of different clocks within our body. So we have different clocks related to the liver, to the skin, to the heart. But we do have a master clock in our brain called the suprachiasmatic nuclei. And that's where our body clocks are synchronized, is through that. And typically we'll see light helps us regulate that clock the best, and especially in the morning. So there's certain times of day where we're most sensitive to light. So getting that lots of light in the morning, getting outside, getting outdoor light exposure, which it can be as much as, you know, 200 to 400 times brighter than our indoor lighting, is really important to help improve sleep quality. But then, you know, light close to our bedtime is also a sensitive period. So we want to be careful about putting electronic devices away an hour before bedtime, not having all bright lights on in the house, because light sends a signal to our brain to wake up, and it reduces that melatonin, which is what we don't want prior to bedtime.
Okay, so do you recommend blue light filtering lenses then, if people can't put their phone away or really want to zone out to TV or whatever it is? Do those work? Are those effective at not altering that circadian rhythm?
Great question. Number one, actually, they've shown that the more light history you have, especially before noon, so getting lots of light outside, can help prevent some of the negative consequences of light at night. So if you're able to get more light in the morning, it makes you less sensitive to light at night. So that would be probably my first suggestion. And then I personally do have some 99% blue light blocking glasses that I use when I'm, you know, when I can't, when I'm working late, I'm on my computer, I will put those on within 2 hours of my normal bedtime, and I'll just wear those all the way up until bed. Sunglasses can work as well. So there's different options that people can have for that. But yes, I believe the research has shown that blue light blocking glasses can help preserve some of that melatonin loss that you would normally get from a screen. But I think it's important to realize that it's not just about the brightness of the screen or the specific blue light frequency, but it's also about the content that you're watching. So, you know, the best piece of advice would be to put away the electronics an hour before bedtime.
Okay. Is there anything else you recommend for good sleep hygiene, like for, you know, a bedtime routine?
I love bedtime routines, and that's one of my strategies for athletes and just people in general. Having relaxing activities to do before bedtime, because you can't just flip a switch and expect to fall asleep instantly. You have to prepare your mind and your body for sleep. So taking that hour before bedtime to potentially read a paper book, take a warm bath or shower, which temporarily increases our temperature, but then our temperature drops, making it easier for sleep. Writing a to-do list before bedtime is kind of offloading some of those thoughts onto paper, and then we're more easily able to fall asleep. Doing stretching, doing breathing techniques, relaxation techniques are all going to be really beneficial for better sleep quality.
Oh, I love that. I always find that that's probably the only hour I really have where I'm not working, I'm not watching my child, I'm just kind of zoning out in front of the TV. And sometimes I almost feel too tired to get up and do all of that. But I noticed that I always feel so much better when I, you know, get up, not just from sitting on the couch, and I go wash my face and get ready for bed and then read a book. Like, I feel like that sleep is always so much better than just falling asleep on the couch and willing myself to go wash my face before falling asleep in bed.
Yes, yes. You know, and then speaking of the TV, in most of us, the TV can help relax us and such. And so it's not, the research has shown that TV watching in general isn't maybe as bad as looking at your phone, looking at an iPad, looking at a computer right before bed. And part of that has to do with the TV's further away. But I think it depends also on how big your TV is, because it can emit a lot of light. But yeah, I think sleep scientists kind of argue about, oh, should the TV go off? Shouldn't it go off? And there's people who advocate for both sides. So really, it's personal, but at least taking some time before bed to prepare your mind and your body for sleep is really important.
Right. I love that. Even if I just have 5 minutes of reading before I can't keep my eyes open, I feel like that just helps reset the day and help me feel less stressed.
Yes, me too. I really like reading before bed. And even if I'm even getting to bed a little late, I'll still, well, I try not to look at the clock as much. You know, I'm trying not to fully keep track of the amount of sleep that I'm getting because I don't want to be anxious. Oh no, I'm only going to get 6 hours tonight, 6.5.
Right.
My performance is going to be terrible tomorrow. So I do try and avoid looking at the clock. Obviously, I try and get to bed early and such because I know the importance of that. But even if I am getting to bed a little bit later, I still try and prioritize just reading that book for a couple of minutes because I think it sets me up for a good night's sleep.
Oh, for sure. I love that. So in that vein, mentioning, oh, I'm only going to get 6 hours and all of that, what are your thoughts on sleep trackers?
Yes, I personally don't use a sleep tracker. I think even keeping track on paper via a sleep diary is potentially more useful depending on the person. So there are a lot of people out there who are anxious about their sleep, and even athletes in general, you have to be cautious about using these sleep trackers because they look at they think maybe subjectively, oh, I got a great night's sleep last night. Then they look at the watch, which is attached to an app, and it shows that they got 10% deep sleep, let's say. And then they become really anxious about that. And when in reality, these trackers, they're getting better at the technology, but they're not a precise science. So it's likely that this person was getting more than 10% deep sleep. It was just that their tracker was telling them that. So the trackers can cause anxiety in some people who are really worried about their sleep. So I'd be cautious to use it in that sense. But I think it can be useful for people trying to create behavior change. They want to track how well they're doing. Maybe that'll increase motivation to get to bed earlier.
For sure. Yeah, I have a smartwatch. I have a Garmin, and I don't wear it to bed. I purposefully take it off because I feel like if I wake up in the middle of the night, maybe if I can't sleep or if I have to use the restroom and then I look at it, it's going to stress me out. Like, oh, I only have 3 more hours to sleep. And what if I don't get to sleep? And then I'm going to be tired the rest of the day. So I just feel like it's just one more thing to worry about. And I don't really want to do that in the middle of the night.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good to know. So we talk a lot about recovery, especially regarding endurance athletes. So can you tell us how sleep plays into recovery for athletes?
I think sleep should be the foundation of recovery. So I don't know if your audience has read Good to Go by Christy Ashwanden. It's a really good book talking about myths of recovery strategies. And in there, you know, I think one of the main points is that if you're not prioritizing sleep, but you're doing all of this other stuff, it's going to be compromised. So your recovery is going to be compromised. So I think people need to think about sleep as the foundation of recovery and then maybe work on some of those other recovery strategies once sleep is a solid part of that foundation. As I mentioned, hormones are being released during sleep, tissues are being repaired. And so that's why it's particularly important for an athlete because muscles are being repaired during sleep. Also with learning as well. So that's an important component for an athlete. Those are kind of the main, I guess, outcomes from a good night's sleep for an athlete. And just people should be aware that sleep should be the foundation of recovery.
Yeah. So regarding that, like if they're not getting enough sleep, if they're having sleep deprivation issues from whatever it is. So you mentioned that a little bit, but how does that affect us in both the short term versus the long term? I know you mentioned not as much learning or ability to retain information. Response time can be down. Is there anything else that we should be concerned with?
Yeah, it's challenging, because the body and the brain does regulate sleep after a sleep deprivation period. So even in the studies I was working in with the participants who are getting, you know, were losing a full night of sleep, when we looked at their sleep, when they finally were able to go to sleep, we found that they had greater amounts of deep sleep. So it's their body is kind of compensating for that, I would say. So short-term sleep deprivation, I would say, is not a big deal because your brain can compensate for that. But if we're talking about years and years and years of sleep deprivation, you know, that's where we might get some of those greater risks for obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease. And I think another thing other people need to be aware of is that when we're sleep deprived day in and day out, we have a hard time gauging how we're performing and how well we're doing. So you may think that you're performing well when you're sleep deprived, but when we look at the research, in reality, their performance is a lot worse. So being aware of that and really trying to prioritize sleep is important. Now, there are instances where, you know, people have sleep disorders going on. And I actually helped develop the athlete sleep screening questionnaire, which maybe we can put a link in the show notes, where athletes can take this questionnaire online at centerforsleep.com. And then it will give them specific recommendations to improve their sleep as it relates to their answers. So it's individualized recommendations, as well as general sleep education, general tips as it relates to travel that people can take advantage of. In this questionnaire, if people are more in that moderate to severe sleep category, sleep difficulty category, then we want them to get help from a sleep professional. So I think it's, you know, you don't want to try and deal with some of these more long-term issues on your own. You want to seek help from a sleep specialist to help you get through that in order to really optimize your sleep.
If an athlete does not sleep well, should they still get up and do their morning workout or skip it in lieu of extra sleep? What would you recommend?
Well, when it comes to regularity of our sleep schedule, that's a very important thing to keep in mind. So I would, if someone gets a poor night's sleep, and this is just something that's occurring every so often, I would say get up at your normal time. And then try and potentially do your workout, but potentially supplement with a nap during the day or trying to get to bed earlier to try and make up for some of that lost sleep. Because the research on regularity of sleep shows that those with more irregular sleep schedules have more disturbances in mood, they have poor academic performance. And there's just some negative consequences when your sleep is very irregular, when you're waking up, you know, 2 hours different each day. So having a regular sleep schedule is important. And, you know, maybe compromise a little bit. So sleep in maybe a half hour longer, do less of a workout. There is the potential for higher risk of injury with a lot of sleep deprivation. So the research shows that in adolescents in particular, those who are getting less than 8 hours of sleep are at almost a 2 times higher risk of injury.
Wow.
When they looked, they looked at athletes across the season. So, you know, that is a concern, but I would say if it's not occurring day in and day out, I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Okay, so what about for the mom who's trying to, you know, return to exercise, running, but she has a newborn who's disrupting sleep, maybe possibly still nursing every couple of hours? Would you recommend for her to maybe not take on a super big training cycle at that time? Like, how does that sleep disruption affect her performance and energy?
I think it's hard to say. I don't think that there's a lot of good research out there on that. I know that with my youngest, I remember the first night he slept through the night, I felt so great the next day. I was able to go for a long run. But yeah, I mean, I would lean more towards taking it easy if you can, and just realize this is a temporary period in your life where, you know, you aren't going to be getting that optimal sleep. And by the way, they say it takes 6 years for parents to get back to their normal sleeping levels pre-pregnancy.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it does take quite a long time. I wouldn't say, you know, don't do anything extra within that first 6 years. I think as the kid gets older, maybe you're not nursing during the night, then you can definitely try and, you know, amp it up and create harder workouts and stuff. But in general, I would say exercise is important, but maybe not in the capacity you were doing prior to, you know, having a child.
Yeah, that's good to know, especially since a lot of us put pressure on ourselves to bounce back to right where we were pre-pregnancy. Maybe, you know, you were deep in a training cycle and you just PR'd and then you got pregnant and then you're like, oh, I'm just going to go right back to where I was. And if it doesn't happen, maybe sleep is playing a bigger factor than you think.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
That makes sense. What about if you don't sleep the night before a race? How important is sleep the night before or even just the week leading up to the race?
Oh, that is a very good question. And it leads to one of my important tips for athletes is to bank sleep leading into an important competition. And so banking sleep, it just means getting more sleep, getting to bed earlier, maybe sleeping in a little bit later, supplementing with naps in the at least 1 week prior to the competition, potentially 2-3 weeks prior to that competition to get more sleep, which leads to better performance during the competition. And also it reduces anxiety related to a poor night's sleep right before the competition. So a lot of athletes and the research has shown that, you know, you're probably not getting as good a night's sleep as you normally would if you have that important competition. So banking sleep can also reduce some of that anxiety, but also make you objectively perform better during that competition.
Oh, that's so interesting because I know most athletes can, you know, wake up every hour to check their alarm and make sure they don't miss it and then maybe feel discouraged thinking that they're not going to have a good race because they didn't sleep well. So that's good to know that you can bank it before.
Yes, that happened to me on my Ironman. You know, it was, I think it was a 7 a.m. start time and you had to be there an hour and a half before. And, you know, you're definitely not getting a good night's sleep prior to that type of event. So for sure, get more sleep leading into it.
Yeah, and utilize those naps if you can, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
So since we are both dietitians, we obviously have to ask about diet. So can you tell us if diet plays into sleep and vice versa, if sleep plays into diet?
Diet definitely can play a role in how well you're sleeping. So I think first of intolerances. So if you are, let's say, you have a reaction to gluten or a reaction to dairy, and you're eating those foods, sometimes that can play a role in the sleep that you're getting, the quality of sleep that you're getting. So I would say that's the first thing. Secondly, when we look more specifically at different types of diet, there isn't a lot of research on this, but there has been some research showing that the Mediterranean diet is helpful for better sleep quality. And what we think is going on is that there's more antioxidants eaten potentially, as well as fiber. So fiber has been shown to increase the amount of deep sleep that you're getting. There's also a reduction in sugars. So those who consume sugary beverages, a lot of simple sugars, actually wake up more during the night. So that's an important factor. So trying to reduce your sugar intake will be good for sleep quality, as well as increasing that fiber intake will be a good thing for your sleep. Now, the other way around, if we look at how sleep impacts nutrition, there are a lot of things going on. Number one, when you're sleep deprived, you have higher amounts of ghrelin, so you feel hungrier, that appetite hormone related to hunger. And then you have lower amounts of leptin, so you feel actually less full when you're sleep deprived. As well as they find about, when you average all the studies together, they find about a 400 calorie increase with these different levels of sleep deprivation. When you're tired, you crave more fats, you crave more sugars, you know, and overall you just generally don't eat as healthy of food because of, as I mentioned before, the deactivation of the prefrontal cortex. So your decision-making is impaired. And so you potentially choose foods that you wouldn't normally choose if you were well-rested. So I would say, yes, sleep can impact nutrition, and primarily as it relates to our hormones, and then that has a downstream effect of the food choices that we make and the calories that we consume.
For sure. I think when I work with clients, and I primarily work with endurance athletes, that's one of the first things I ask is, how much sleep are you getting? Because if they're getting 5-6 hours and they have high stress levels, I can guarantee that they are probably going to be craving more carbs and simple sugars and really relying on that caffeine. And that can definitely affect their performance, their energy level throughout the day. And then again, in turn, their sleep the next night. So it just seems like it is a cascading effect. It affects so much more than we think. It's not just, I'm going to go to sleep and that's the end of it. It just affects the whole rest of our day.
Absolutely. Yes.
So are there any safe supplements or medications you recommend for athletes if they're just not good sleepers, if someone just cannot seem to get to that 7-8 hour window, or they wake up often?
I would say definitely check out the athlete sleep screening questionnaire, and we want to get at the source of the problem. So in the instance where someone's suffering from chronic insomnia, sleeping pills or melatonin supplements are not going to be very good long term. I would say number one, if you do have a sleep problem, a moderate to severe sleep problem, get it checked out by a sleep professional. Number two, melatonin is actually becoming more increasingly popular among athletes. I did a talk one time, and the athletes were calling them mellies. So they were popping mellies, which is a melatonin supplement. And melatonin in general, we have to be careful the brand that you're using, because a lot of time what's on the label is not actually what you're getting. And there was a study to support that. So that's something to be aware of. And I think melatonin is more useful, not in the instance of those with insomnia, but more in the instance of potentially a night owl who's wanting to shift their circadian rhythm to an earlier time. Melatonin, blocking light at night, getting lots of light in the morning is going to be useful for them. But also melatonin is useful for jet lag as well. So that would be instances where I would use melatonin. When it comes to tart cherry juice, that has been shown to be pretty useful in non-athletes, at least. So I know there's benefits on muscle recovery for athletes specifically, but when they're looking as it relates to sleep, there is some promising results, I would say, in non-athletes where they're gaining more sleep, they're producing more melatonin from this tart cherry juice that they're taking. So that's something to consider. Also, kiwi fruit has been, there was one study, maybe two studies, showing that kiwi fruit helps increase melatonin and help you get a better night's sleep. And in that study, I think it was 2 kiwi fruit an hour before bedtime. I would say magnesium, if people are deficient in magnesium. So not maybe taking it if you don't know whether or not you're deficient or not, but if you are deficient in magnesium could be a useful supplement for people to get a better night's sleep.
Yes, we've talked about that a lot on our electrolytes episode, how magnesium can kind of be that missing electrolyte that a lot of people forget about in favor of sodium and potassium, and how it can really have an effect on a lot of different systems in your body. So that's super interesting.
Yes.
Love it. Dr. Bender, this has been so insightful, and I feel like I know so much more about sleep and how it affects everything that we have going on throughout the day, including our performance, and that I definitely need to get more naps in. So before we do our rapid fire questions, can you tell us where people can find more about you and connect with you?
Yeah, I'm on social media. So I'm on Twitter and Instagram at sleep4sport. And then I'm also working on developing a website, sleepwelltowin.com. I haven't quite gotten there yet. So if you go there, it's going to look kind of weird, but I am hoping to update that within the next month or so.
Nice. Love it. Cool. Okay. So we're going to do a couple of rapid fire questions, if that's okay with you.
Okay.
All right. So just say the first thing that comes into your head. So what is your favorite ice cream flavor?
Ooh, mint cookie.
Ooh, that's a very common one. We've had a lot of people say that. Yes. Isn't that so funny? What's your favorite type of workout?
Probably just running. It's, you know, you don't need any special equipment. I like to take the dog as well. So yeah, I would say running.
Nice. What's your favorite race distance since you've done a whole bunch?
Probably 12K. Yeah, there is. Did you ever do Bloomsday?
No. What's that?
Oh, it's one of the biggest races, I thought it was, in the U.S. as when it comes to that distance. In Spokane, it's always the first week of May.
Oh, fun.
So yeah, it's a really fun race. There's a lot of hills. And when I was training for Ironman, I was able to get under an hour, which was like my goal.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's speedy. Wow. That's great. What is your favorite easy weeknight meal?
Just a bowl, I would say. So I like to do like rice, chicken, lettuce, avocado, put a little bit of crunchy, so like some pumpkin seeds. Yeah, I'm really digging the rice bowls.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, would you pick tacos or pizza?
Tacos.
Nice. And then your favorite show to binge watch during quarantine?
I'd say America's Got Talent.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Yes. I watched that a lot. It's a good family show with the kids as well. So yeah, we've been watching a lot of America's Got Talent.
Nice. Dr. Bender, is there anything else that we didn't cover that you want to leave us with?
We covered so much. We covered the napping, the caffeine, the importance of prioritizing sleep, also sleep quality, the pre-bedtime routine. We covered a lot. I would just leave people with, again, reiterate that if you're struggling with a sleep problem, to seek help from a sleep professional. There are, for example, for insomnia, there are cognitive behavioral therapy specialists that specialize in insomnia specifically that help kind of change the way you're thinking as well as your behaviors as it relates to sleep. And maybe for some people out there, you may not have access to someone like that, but there's a lot of online programs that you could, you know, look into that cover cognitive behavioral therapy aspects of insomnia. But it may be more than just insomnia. There may be something physiological going on, such as sleep apnea, where you stop breathing during the middle of the night. So if you're really struggling with sleep problems, I would say 3 days a week, and it's been occurring for at least a month, and it's not related to maybe, you know, a toddler or a baby, to really get help from a sleep professional, because it's going to make a difference.
I love that. And we will definitely link to your athlete sleep screening questionnaire. Maybe a lot of people will get more insight from that and then be more open-minded to seeking a sleep specialist. So thank you for telling us all about that.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Yay. Thanks. That wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review so others can find it more easily. You can also stay in touch with us by joining our Facebook group, Nutrition for Runners. If you have any requests for future episode topics and more, email us at nailyournutritioncourse1@gmail.com. Happy fueling!